Hello, this is Mike Dell, co-host of your podcast, Blueberry's official podcast. This is episode 41, and yesterday Todd and I had the honor of doing an hour on the International Podcast Day live stream, the 30-hour live stream in celebration of International Podcast Day, which happens on September 30th every year. Anyway, I'm going to join the recording because I missed kind of the beginning of it a little bit. We're going to go ahead and just replay that here for this episode, for this time here on your podcast. Todd and I will be back in a couple of weeks. Be sure to check out everything going on over at PowerPressPodcast.com, Mackenzie's show, a Blueberry PowerPress podcast. And, of course, this one is available over there. And also, real quick note, look for PowerPress 7.04. Which should be out by the time this episode goes out, although I'm not exactly sure when it's going out. Angelo, as I record this, just messaged and said that it was almost done. But we have two new features. One feature is something we've been wanting for a while, is skip to position. So you should be able to put in a position, you know, like say 2 minutes and 40 seconds in, and have a link to that in your show notes, and you should be able to click that and it'll start playing there. And also you'll be able to send out a link saying, you know, okay, I covered this topic here, and people go to that link and the player will start playing at that point. So that's the one feature. The other one is emojis. And yeah, I know, emojis, really? But okay. It is technically possible, and PowerPress is now going to include emojis in your show notes. They do work on the Apple Podcasts app, I do believe. I believe they tested that. So, but it, you know, they don't work everywhere. So please don't ask me at first here. This is a brand new thing. So, and I think Todd and I covered that in the International Podcast Day thing. So let's get to that right now. In progress.
Mike, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Mike Dell. I've been podcasting since 2005. I've been working with Blueberry now for, almost 10 years now, Todd. Do you believe that? I'm the customer support manager. I had to think about that because I just got a new title. So,
and I think I actually got it right on your lower third, which I'm going to let me see if I did. Yes, customer support manager.
There we go.
So anyway, welcome everyone. And thanks to Dave and Steve for, you know, organizing this, putting this on. We've got a lot of great speakers, a lot of great stuff going on. I do want to put a pitch in. I'll be back with you two more times, once for the podcast awards at 8 p.m., 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then I'll be on the hour after that to talk about growing your podcast. But Mike and I, to get collectively, you know, if you think about it, I've been in the space since October 2004. So 24 years of seeing stuff, or how many years it's been. And but we've seen it all. But, you know, one thing that Blueberry has got, has ingrained from day one, from building our building our company, is that we want podcasters to succeed on their brand, on their websites. We want them to build their empire on ground, basically, that they own and that they can live on for a long time. You know, you look at my personal website over at geeknewscentral.com, and that site has predates podcasting. And I was actually a blogger before I was a podcaster, but one thing that we know now, because of Google Podcasts coming into the scene, is that some best practices right now is that Google search is absolutely and unequivocally your friend. And I've known this for many, many years. And actually, tonight I'll bring this into even more stark reality on how important it is. But Mike, you and I both have run our own websites and wrote our own blog post and wrote our own show notes, and it's all resided on our own .com for many years. And, you know, what's the type of traffic you get from Google on a daily basis?
I would say, you know, percentage wise, you know, I'm not going to give you the actual number, but percentage wise, I would say, you know, it's a good 75% show up on my website because of, you know, something I've written in a blog post or something I've titled a blog post or, you know, it's something like that. It's not really the audio part of it that attracts people for Google search. And, you know, the whole idea is you want that to be from your own website. And you want it to, you know, as you always say, Todd, write your show notes for Google and do your show for your audience. And that's...
Yeah, and that's for sure. And, you know, and I even learned a little lesson myself. Those of you that subscribe to the new media show that I do with Rob Greenlee on a weekly basis, as I was, you know, had so for so long just been in auto mode, you know, I have bloggers that, unfortunately, I can afford bloggers to do blog posts for me. And, but I wasn't paying attention to the traffic too much. It was just a given. I knew what I was getting. But July 1st, I started to, I didn't notice, but July 1st, I got penalized by Google for my page speeds. So I was, had not been paying attention to image sizes we were putting on the website and all those little things that go into part of the ranking of a website that Google looks at when you're looking at your .com. So having a website and writing blog posts goes a long way to getting Google index your site and be at the top of the search results. But also little things like not putting too big of images on the website, making sure that you don't have a lot of a whole bunch of JavaScript running and a whole bunch of banners flying and a whole bunch of underlying stuff that really will cause your page speed to the loading speed to slow down. So, you know, you want to optimize on that. And those of you that are serious in this space, if you're on a $2 a month shared web hosting account with whatever host du jour, be careful. Be careful about being on that $2 account. Sometimes it pays to pay a little bit more for a web host that has a little higher performance than a standard web hosting account because it counts. Google looks at that information on page speed load and they really, and again, this is web page speed. They look at that and as part of the ranking now. And actually, for those of you that are on Chrome, having just loaded the International Podcast Day website page today, and if you've agreed within Chrome to send information back to Google, you've singled back to Google through your browser, believe it or not, that page is page speed, and it goes part of the into the part of the validation of indexing. So anyway, so the Google, Beast, Bing, all these other sites are your friend, and you want to make sure that being on your website, being on your .com, you're getting the value and not host du jour at yourhosting.com/your site. You're building their site. You're not building your site. So that's part of our philosophy here and a best practice. Also, of course, this is up for debate. A lot of people over the years have said you don't have to have your feed on your own .com. We truly believe it's important to control your own feed as well. If you have your feed with your with another hosting provider, I'm not saying that any company's going to go out of business, but we've seen it before. I don't have to worry ever about a company going out of business. I control my feed. I own my feed. It's my IP. It's my, well, you have a saying for it, Mike, for having your own feed. It's like what?
It's like what?
The radio tower analogy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, you know, it's the website or your RSS feed is your transmitter for your radio station. And, you know, ironically, in broadcasting, a lot of times somebody will rent tower space and then get kicked off the tower, and then they got to scramble for tower space. Well, same thing with your RSS feed. You want to, you know, you want to own it. You don't want to have to worry about the company that's handling your feed going out of business or changing the rules on you or whatever. Just, you know, own it. You know, own everything about it.
With the number of parties that are coming into the podcasting space today, and there's a lot, you know, it's podcast host du jour at this point. You just don't know. And you don't know what their financial situation is. You know, I think, you know, if you're working with, you know, some of the other hosts that are out there that have been around for a while, your feed's probably pretty safe. And if you want to move, they'll move it. You know, that's relatively not a non-issue. But I still truly believe that if you are truly concerned about your brand, that you own the stack. So let's talk about feed size, Mike, a little bit.
Yeah, feeds. Well, first off, when Apple first added podcasting to iTunes, the desktop software, because there wasn't any such thing as a smartphone, they had it limited to, I believe, 25 episodes, and that kept the feed sizes rather small. Now they've allowed you to go up to 300, but a lot of times I don't recommend that because that can make your feed get too large. You should try to keep your feed under half a megabyte. I know, you know, you can go bigger. You know, I think some of the other places have rules that, you know, you go up to a megabyte and some of them even bigger than that. And that's great and fine and dandy. But as Todd was talking about page load speeds for the website, your feed load speeds are important because Apple's and all the other directories have, what, 600,000 podcasts now to look at every so often? So if it takes you more than a couple of seconds for your feed to download, they may skip you. So it might slow down the updating. It can also, you know, cause trouble with your website itself. If that feed's too large and you're hitting, you know, you've got a bunch of subscribers, that's going to, you know, put quite the load on your web server. So you want to kind of balance that out. I always tell people about 100's usually good. Anyway, that's it about feed size.
You know, one thing that I've always said about that too is, you know, the goal for me is to always get my audience back to the website.
Right.
And if they want to consume the earlier episodes, if you have a podcast series that is long tail, you're going to want them to come to the website. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to have all 300 of your episodes in the feed. Sure. And if you write a lot of show notes, this compounds, and which you should be. You should be writing great show notes, 2-3 paragraphs at a minimum. In other words, to go and help that Google juice to come to your website to be found. But then if you write 2 or 3 paragraphs of show notes and you have 20 links for the stuff you've talked about during that episode, that feed's going to get very big very, very quickly. So, you know, just keep that in mind. There is a trade-off there. I would rather have the Google traffic coming in than worrying about someone going and listening to an episode that I recorded a year ago.
Right. On most of my podcasts, I go 25.
I go 50.
Yeah, because everybody can, you know, they can go back to the website and find every single episode I ever done. But I want it to, you know, drive them back to the website for one thing, if they really want to listen to the old stuff. And otherwise, I just want it to be fast. I want it to update. When I publish an episode, I'd like it to get everywhere as quickly as possible, but reasonable. And, that I think just 25 is enough, but 50 is good. I tell customers 100.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next topic, Mike.
Okay. Same thing with the feed size. You got to keep your artwork size. I get more questions in tech support about artwork than just about anything else. And the whole idea with the artwork is you should keep it under half a megabyte. And I know you can go larger and sometimes it'll work. You know, we've had this debate before, but half a megabyte seems to be really, keeps everybody happy. Same thing with inside your ID3 tags. If you're going to put the image in your ID3 tags, you want that to be definitely below a megabyte, but you want it to be even smaller because that first little bit of your file is what gets read, you know, it's all the metadata. And if it's bigger than a megabyte, then that metadata is going to get missed by a lot of apps that would use that. So, you know, just keep your artwork under half a megabyte. You want to use 1400 by 1400 is the minimum, 3000 by 3000 is the maximum. And you want to keep that thing under half a megabyte. So 1400 is usually good enough. I know Apple now is really trying to get everybody to go to 3000. That could be done. JPEG will generally be smaller than a ping, unless your image is, you know, solid colors, you know, say 5 or 6 solid colors and no, you know, actual photos in there, the ping might be smaller. So try it both ways.
And I think too is, you know, I really can't emphasize this enough, is that image size is a big factor. And especially if, now here's the delta. If you're putting images in your ID3 tags, you know, you can go 300 by 300 or 600 by 600 mm-hmm. on ID3 only, but your feed image, again, try to keep that limited in size to the best of your ability, and not lose the quality. It is important to keep that file size reasonable. When you get to 3,000 by 3,000 with a PNG and it's got multiple colors in it, that yeah. file size can get big.
Yeah, and so if you probably have to. If anybody's good at Photoshop, if you're going to be saving it as a JPEG, I always say put it at about 40% quality at 3,000, and that'll usually get it, to where it's the right size. And believe me, 3,000 pixels, even if you're at the 40% quality in Photoshop, is still pretty darn nice.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about some new stuff that's been going on with Apple. And it's really, really critical. And some shows are finding out the hard way, and new podcasters are finding out definitely that they're having challenges getting their shows listed. And there's really three things that we want to talk about today. Is number one, titles are titles, authors are authors, and episodes, even now, how you title your episodes are important to not get the ban hammer from Apple. Apple is applying editorial control in ways we've never seen ever.
Yeah, and this is just recent.
Would you say, Mike?
This is just recently that they've been really doing that.
So they're being very, very strict on titles. As an example, my daily podcast, Semicolon with John Smith, will get rejected. My daily podcast, Semicolon, Talking About Everything Podcasting, will get rejected. What they want in that title is My Daily Podcast. They don't want any special characters, anything like that. If you have a special character in your show now, and you're actively on Apple Podcast, and you have a long title, I'm just giving you a heads up, you may find your show removed from Apple Podcast. They are doing this. They are removing shows. Same thing with author. Your name and your co-host name, Todd Cochran and Mike Dell. That's appropriate. Not Todd Cochran's daily podcast. No keyword stuffing. You want to talk a little bit about what we saw this past week on episode titles, Mike?
Yeah, on the episode titles, this is something really brand new. An SEO practice that in PowerPress especially was to add your show title to your episode title. So you would have your episode title, and then you would have a dash, and then the name of your podcast. That would help your episodes show up in the search if someone searches for your podcast, your main title. Well, Apple's been slowly but surely, I've had three or four of them where that's why they were kicked out of Apple. And, you know, it took two or three emails back and forth with Apple to figure out what was going on. So, you know, just be aware that they want just, you know, what the tag says. If it's an author tag, they want the author. If it's a title tag, they want the title. And there's a little question even about having numbers, having your episode numbers in your title. Now, you know, in PowerPress specifically, you can specify an iTunes episode title versus an everybody else episode title. So that's something you can do if you want to have your episode numbers in the title. Like I said, I don't know if Apple's kicking people for that, but I know they're discouraging that, last I heard.
So let's just be clear here. I think we all have a tendency to agree that we don't, and this is a talking point that all of us should be talking about, is that Apple is applying editorial control, and they are the biggest direct mount. Here's the problem. The majority of podcast apps are out there, Android and iOS, have been lazy in not doing their own directory. In other words, they rely on the Apple API to populate their app. So because these apps, the majority of them have been lazy and not built their own directory and put the database in place that they needed to do, they are now basically allowing Google to do editorial control of all the shows on their apps. And in essence, your show naming, how you want to make it appear, how you want the description to be, how you want your episode titles to appear, is now editorial controlled at Apple to a certain extent. Right. Now, again, if you put an episode out and write a certain title, they're probably not going to ban you. This is, we're seeing more shows being rejected on submission, right, and fewer being put in the penalty box that are active. But, you know, Apple's helped us get to the point where we are. They want to clean up their directory. It is what it is. But maybe this will motivate all the third-party apps that are out there to have their own directory and not necessarily have to feed the beast from the Apple Podcasts API. So that's just, you know, that's a comment we could talk a whole hour about right here.
Definitely.
On the show. So let's see, what's next? Let's talk about production and producing your show. I am totally old school. I know some of you spend hours and hours and hours editing. I do about 3 hours of 3.5 hours of content a week personally, and I have been doing that for 14 years and I'm still married. So I don't spend hours and hours editing. I cut the end, I cut the beginning, I cut the end. I apply a little leveling logic to it. I run the WAV file through a Phonic and I save to MP3 and I publish. Well, that's my editing. I've never edited any of my shows. I know some of you could not think about releasing a show without having edited, but a little editing can go a long way. A lot of editing can sound overproduced. So, Mike, you want to talk a little bit about that yourself as well?
Oh, yeah. When I first started podcasting, I edited a little bit. And then I started a second show with a friend of mine. And we would have 20-minute episodes, something like that. And I would spend hours taking out all the ums and the mouth clicks and all that stuff. And guess what? That podcast didn't last because it was too much work, and I couldn't give up on the editing on that one for some reason. And, you know, it just got to be too much. So I pretty much do what Todd does now. I record, clip the ends, run it through Auphonic, and generally it goes out. Now, if there was some blatant thing, you know, that we did wrong, while we're recording, I'll fix that. And, you know, just minor stuff. But if I edit more than 5 minutes in an episode, that's more than normal.
So one thing that we have to be aware of here is that as a new podcaster, and this is something we have to think about for our new podcasters that are coming in. We know that that podcasting's hard enough, creating content, great content. We all are doing the grind. We're putting out this content. We're working on topics. We're trying to keep it interesting. We're trying to keep the people engaged. And that is hard enough. And then to put this mindset into a content creator that you got to spend 5 hours editing what you just worked on for 30 minutes. This is the number one reason people quit. It's too much work. So if you are new, my suggestion is your show number 50 is not going to sound anything like episode one. If you've never pulled a mic up before and you're on episode one, no one's going to hardly listen to episode one anyway. And we all know that unless you're very, very lucky, you're going to have to do a couple of years of hard work in your podcast to make it grow and build an established audience and do the marketing and everything that we've heard from some prior speakers today. So yes, a little editing is probably okay, but a lot of editing is going to cause you to quit. And this is, again, we've just been around this thing too long to see how many podcasters quit and they say it's too much work. I have to do too much stuff with the show. I have to edit it and blah, 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 blah. And more than likely what it is, is they have a spouse or significant other, a partner that comes into the studio and says, "What are you doing? Why are you not out here with me? Why are you not spending time with the kids? Why did you have to miss the basketball game? Why? And this internal pressure builds up. And the next thing you know, they have to quit the podcast because they spent too much time on the podcast. So the statistics have held straight through for many, many years. 50% of shows quit before episode 7. Why? Why do they quit? Another 50% quit before they hit 23 to 25 episodes. Why do they quit? And the reason often is not necessarily the content. It's just too hard to do the other stuff. All this editing that they had been so told that they have to do. Let's get people up, get them running, getting them making content, getting them building an audience with a little dead air in there a little bit in the beginning so we can get them past the stage of this is too hard and I'm excited. Now I'm building an audience. I'm getting feedback. There's going to be some out there that are in the editing business say, "You're wrong. You're wrong." Well, they're in the editing business to make money. They want to edit your show. They want, there's a place for them. Thank goodness. But for these new podcasters, we've got to get their shows out, get them going, get them moving, get them started. How many of you in the chat room today, please tell me, do you hate editing? Chris says, "I love editing."
Yep, I see that. Okay, and that's more power to you. If you want to edit, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. I always tell people, your first episode's going to suck. Your next episode's going to suck a little less. I mean, come on. So let's not obsess over perfection because you definitely are not going to achieve perfection right away or even ever.
I would rather have a mistake in my show and work through it or say that was dumb. I just made a mistake. And it's more authentic that way. Sure. You know, podcasting is built on the grassroots of podcasting. We started was raw. It was raw content.
It's the guy next to the water heater in the basement,
And we will all admit that the quality level has to get better. Mic, sound, all that stuff. So again, a little editing goes a long way. Let's talk about encoding, media encoding.
Yeah. So like I said, good audio is great and you want it to be good, but good is good enough. 128 kilobit stereo MP3. Yes, I know you can do AAC. MP3 is probably better. Not better, but good enough. 44.1 kilohertz, and then you want to level it to minus 16 LUFS. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but Aphonic is the easiest way to do that. There are other apps that'll do that. But, I always tell my customers, I say, they're worried about the audio quality. And I say, well, 90% of the people that are listening to your podcast are going to use the crappy earbuds that come with their phone, or they're going to stream you through Bluetooth to their car stereo, and anything better than 128 is just a waste of bandwidth. And you think about it this way, there's people on cell phone plans that are limited, and if they download your podcast and you're doing it 320, that's going to suck up more of their bandwidth, more of their gigs for the month. And so, be nice to your audience as well. And go ahead.
And I know some of you still encode at 64 or 96. Sure. That's fine. 128 is probably the very top that you even want to consider. Sure. And then those of you that don't know what LUFS or LUFS mean, LUFS, minus 16 LUFS. Yeah. $99 for independent folks is Aphonic. For those of you that are commercial, $299. You'd use it right on your desktop. This is the best money. And I don't have an affiliate code to sell. I'm not associated with Aphonic. I use it. I live by it. I love it. This is the best tool for podcasters out there that are looking to level their shows, period. Aphonic minus 16 LUFS. If you use Adobe Edition, there is a way to set minus 16 LUFS in Adobe Edition as well. So just be aware of that. But let's talk about the most fun topic that seems to come up all the time. And I'm going to just before say this. That's not even the right way to say it, right? There's the edit. Your MP3 file name does nothing to help you in Google SEO or search or being found in a podcast app. The way you name your file means nothing in the scheme of things except as an organizational function for you. Right. So, Mike, what's the longest MP3 file name that you've ever seen?
I forget exactly, and I wish I would have wrote it down because I would have read it to you, but that would have taken up about a minute. This person basically put their entire show notes in the .mp3 with underscores between every word. And, I mean, it was 200 and something characters long.
Yeah, the software version of Phonik is a one-time fee, $99. You can use their online service. I recommend podcasters use the software. But the going back to the MP3 file, it was like this underscore show underscore is underscore cool underscore please underscore what. I mean, you guys get it, right? Yeah. On and on and on and
it's
on.
It's nuts.
And actually, it was so long, it broke the internet.
Yeah. What it did is at some point, I think it was 255 characters it cut off, so the .mp3 wasn't even on the file name once it left the server.
Right. So, you know, you name the, do the naming convention you want. The naming convention I've used for many, many years, well, since 2004. Again, the name of the MP3 means nothing to your Google search. Again, remember, it's just a file. My naming convention is very simple, and how I would do today's show would be GNC-2018-09-030.mp3.
Yeah, and I go even simpler than that. I go, like for my show, Podcast Help Desk, it's PhD, and the next episode will be 111. That's it.
So it's PHP111.mp3.
Yeah, that's it. They just have to be unique, and that's the only requirement.
And sadly, some podcast hosts, there's a couple still out there that when you upload your media file, they rename it anyway.
Yeah.
They rename it and call it MP3. And every media file in their entire system has the exact same name, media name.
Yeah, they put each file in its own folder, and that's how they differentiate between the episodes, which prevents people from migrating it to another service.
Right. So, yeah, it makes it very difficult when you want to migrate, absolutely, because most of us, that when we migrate shows, we basically pull the full list of URLs that's in the feed, pull the media, and if the media file's name is exactly the same, well, it really puts, this is their way of locking you into their service and making it very, very hard to move. It's a very dirty trick in podcasting. I don't like it. For the companies that do it, they should be shamed. But there's companies out there that do it today. It's a marketing ploy that you have no idea was a marketing ploy. That when you want to move to us, we're going to say, oh, you're using so-and-so. You're going to have to re-upload all your files.
Yeah, we do have ways around that now. So,
right. We have found a way around. Okay. Let's talk about a quiet recording environment. Of course, I got the studio door open here. So maybe some folks have heard some stuff going on in the background here that I have family
and,
things
and
going
I have,
on.
I have two beagles right over there. That if somebody pulls in the driveway, you're going to hear them. So I'm not following that either.
I record with the windows open, by the way. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, well, if I did that, I've got a 5-lane road right behind me. That won't work. But yeah, you just want to be, you know, you want to, the original recording is more important, you know, than, you know, taking noise out of a recording later is not easy, you know, so try to get it as quiet as possible. I know a lot of people, Mignon Fogarty, she's been podcasting for as long as we have, and I think she still does hers in a coat closet full of clothes because of the dampening effect, and, you know, it's nice and quiet, and, you know, I use a noise gate, so if I open up the noise gate, you would hear cars going behind me. You'd probably hear the dogs walking around over here, but now I've got a noise gate, so when I shut up, you don't hear me. But there's, you know, other ways of getting around that, but you really do want to keep it as quiet as possible when you're recording, especially if you don't want to edit.
And there's software noise gates and there's hardware noise gates. Both of them work pretty good.
Sure.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the microphone. And of course, here in front of me, I have a $1,400 Blue Mic mouse. I absolutely love this mic. I did not pay for it. They gave it to me as a promotional item to do a review, and I did. Before that, I was using a Rode NTK. Before that, I was using I went through four or five different mics, and I've kind of obsessed on mics. But in the early days, there wasn't the ATR2200 or ATR2100. That mic didn't exist. But today, there are some great mics out there that are, $49, $50, $100. I will say this, friends don't let friends use Yetis, okay? Please, if you're going to do a show with two or three people, don't use a Yeti and try to get two or three people around it to talk. Please buy something else. That's my only recommendation. But again, don't obsess over the microphone like I have. Mike, what are you using today? You're just using a headset mic, right?
Yeah, I'm using the ATR, whatever, BPHS1, Audio Technica. And it's a fairly high-end headset microphone. But it doesn't sound significantly worse than my $300 Heil PR40. You know, cue the harps or whatever. Or, you know, I've got a $400-something I'm losing my train of thought. But anyway, you know, all these microphones, they don't sound significantly different. I have an ATR2100. I have this thing right here. Okay, this came in a 4-pack, I think, for $35. It's some sort of Behringer thing. It doesn't sound significantly worse than what I'm talking on now or a Heil PR40. It's a lot of it's mic technique as well and being in a quiet environment. But, you know, I guess the bottom line is a new mic isn't going to get you more listeners unless your audio quality is really crappy right now.
Well, here's the interesting thing about me. You know, the Heil PR40 sounds horrible with me. I've tried the PR30, and I like the 30 better than I like the 40, just from a sound perspective. So everyone's voice is a little bit different. You know, if I had to rebuild this studio again, you know, back here is a whole rack of stuff. You know, there's a $1,000 microphone preamplifier. You know, do I need that in a $1,400 mic? You know, $2,400 just before I even get to the mixer? No, absolutely not. The $2,100 going into the computer, there is a little bit of difference in the sound, but again, $2,400 worth of difference in sound.
Right. Well, here I'm on that little Behringer mic now, and
you can't even tell the difference.
Can barely tell the difference. There's the headset, and there's the Behringer. Okay, this one's set a little hotter, but other than that, there's not a whole lot of difference.
No. So again, don't get hung up too much on the mic. Just the more important thing is to get recording. All right. So let's talk about something that we're releasing today. A little promotion from us. Those of you that are using PowerPress, you'll be glad to know that a new version of PowerPress, if it's either out now or it's coming within
moments.
Coming
real soon.
Yeah, and it's got a new feature called Skip to Position. It's something that I've wanted for a couple of years. Basically, you'll be able to put a time hack in your show notes. And then when Pearson, and it's a hyperlink, and when someone clicks on that, it'll jump to that particular spot in the audio file. Same thing, you'll be able to go out on Twitter and be able to link, say, okay, I was talking to, if you had 10 topics, you can do now 10 different tweets. The tweet with the link will jump you to that segment in your audio. We've got something else planned for the future for that feature that's going to make it even more cool, but to not really announce that yet. But the skip to position feature is there. I know it's supported by a couple of other platforms, but we're adding it now. And
yeah, I was going to say you had to trade something for that, Todd.
So this is kind of funny because we had a couple of requests come in asking. Now, Everyone, please don't roll your eyeballs.
Right. I'm not going to let you see it.
We had some requests from some younger producers asking for emojis to be able to put emojis in episodes. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. Emojis? Really? And Angelo, our CIO, who's the master behind PowerPress, he went off and for like an hour was looking at the code, said, hey, this is easy. I'd flip that on. And I'm like, you're not releasing PowerPress with emojis without skip to position.
Do one without the other.
No, you can't do one without the other. So I forced my hand. I did a little pressure. So yes, we're going to have emojis in episodes. So now you'll be able to put a fire truck or a thumbs up or a smiley face or one of the other thought, but please,
in your show notes,
please be careful in using these emojis in your episode titles. We'll see how bad this is going to be
don't call me when your emoji doesn't show up on X app. Okay, I don't know. It's new.
it will work in Apple Podcast. We've tested it. It's okay. Have an emoji. So you can tell I'm really really excited about that.
We're the old guard, Todd. I'm afraid. Yeah.
But then there's some of you out there that rely on emojis for everything. So here you go. There's the emojis for you. So we're trying to take care of the young folks doing shows, and the old guys are like rolling their eyeballs. Okay. So
yeah, this ought to be fun.
All right. So
talking about show promotion.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, spend too much time on this because you guys just had a couple sessions ago, all about promotions. But, Facebook groups, we need to help the new podcasters. And as you as an existing podcaster can help educate them on which host to use, you can make your recommendations. And we want to try to be helpful, and we need to be giving them advice on, proper etiquette in the forums and everything. So as a podcaster, we can help these new podcasters, but don't go in there and spam your show and, do some sort of, can you guys listen to this show and give me a tips? We all want our show to be heard, but podcasters normally don't listen to a lot of other podcaster shows. I do. I have to, because my position in the space, I listen to 100 new shows every 2 weeks. It's just, I've done that for years and years and years. So, but the majority of you are not out listening to a whole bunch of shows, and we don't have. So if you're a new podcaster, you're ask a couple of podcasters directly via email. You can even email me, Todd. Hey, can you listen to my show? I'll listen to it. I'm going to give you about a 2-sentence feedback, because that's about all the time I'm going to have to give you input back. So we're in these Facebook groups. Don't spam. Be useful. I think we just got to try to keep the help. Yeah. Us as podcasters can help the Facebook moderators in keeping, good topics of conversation flowing. It'll help the space a great deal. It really, really will.
Right. If you want to promote your show in a Facebook group, go to a Facebook group that is, under your topic. I do a podcast about fast food. So I've got a fast food Facebook group that I, let them know that I do have a podcast. But I went in there and I've been, participating. I, put pictures up and all that. I just didn't go in there and say, hey, I got a podcast, come listen to it. Just be reasonable even there. But, these podcast-related Facebook groups, nobody in there is going there to find an episode to listen to. They're in there to help other podcasters or to get help. And all that. And along those same lines, if you want help with something, completely technical, it has to do with your podcast hosting company, that's not the place to do it. Email us directly at support@blueberry for blueberry and support@Lipson for Lipson and so on and so forth. Anyway, enough of my soapbox.
Yeah, support. Go to your perspective companies, because we try to monitor everything, but it's hard. Hey, Mike, we've got about 10 minutes left.
Yes.
And Daniel, oh my God, I'm looking in chat. Yes, that was a good use of emojis there, Daniel. All right. So new podcasters mistakes. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Stressing over stats. You going into the stat systems and hitting refresh every 5 minutes. It happens.
Oh, it sure does. We had to change how our stats work because of that.
Yeah. Hitting refresh every 5 minutes to see if you got two more downloads is not productive. Checking your stats once or twice a day, that's probably pretty cool. I did that in the early days. I haven't looked at my personal stats in months. That gives you how you kind of grow out of it. Oh, yeah. There is no silver bullet for your launch. Just start and make good content. You know, and also think about the long haul of your show. Okay. Some platforms are making it very easy to get started right now and to in at a price of your content, at a price of your potential intellectual property.
Any control.
So take 15 minutes and please, if you're going to be thinking about using a specific podcasting company, read the terms of service, do a little research on them, take just 15 minutes and you're going to find plenty of information out about those hosts before you pull the trigger. We're seeing on certain platforms, incredibly high failure rates of shows, incredibly high failure rates. They get in and they do a test. This is my test. This is a test of my new podcast. And that's their only episode they ever put out, but yet they're in Apple Podcasts. So please, you know, work with a team that's out there that is established, that has good support, that's engaged in the community. You know, yes, I'm from Blueberry, but, you know, you look at the Podbean folks, you look at Libsyn, and there's a number of others that are actively involved in helping podcasters in the community. You know, you want to be somewhere where you're going to get some support as a new podcaster and as an existing podcaster. You want to talk a little bit about obsessing about the little stuff, Mike?
Oh, yeah. You know, it just goes back to some of the other stuff we talked about. But, you know, some people just obsess about the smallest things. You know, I get people all the time that, you know, they're obsessed about episodic artwork when most of the apps don't use it. You know, some of them do, some of them don't. But, you know, they're just obsessed about that. Yet their weekly show, they've missed 3 weeks. Because they're obsessed about whether the episodic artwork shows up on an episode they put out a month ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just don't sweat the small stuff and ignore the big stuff.
You know, one thing I've seen is for new podcasters, and the best habit to get into is get used to workflow and production. Write, you know, as you develop that, write that out and follow that production, you know, and then... If you want to make tweaks, you can tweak something along the line, but have a script on how your show is going to progress. My show format today follows this almost the same exact format it did 14 years ago. And when I do a tweak in the show format, I do one thing and I see how the audience reacts. So take time and develop that flow. And it may not, again, it's going to develop over the first 10, 15, 20 or 25 episodes, but you know, get that flow down and it'll make it a lot easier when you're putting your show together, and it reduces the amount of work that you have to do. And in your mind's going to get trained. Your audience is also going to get trained on the flow of the content coming to them. But I think, Mike, maybe the most important part is just asking for help or for advice too, right? When you're stuck.
Certainly. Yeah. When you're stuck, just, you know, reach out to, you know, if you're hosting at a hosting company, their support team can help you out. Get on the Facebook groups, the, you know, whatever. Reach out. You know, podcasters are generally a friendly bunch, as you can see from, you know, this gathering today.
And, you know, everyone's got an opinion and no opinion's wrong. And the best part about podcasting, and I think that we all know this true at heart, there's no one way and there's no Todd's way. And there's no Mike's way. There is your way. And guess what? That's the most important thing. There are no rules. You do as you please. And anyone that tries to give you rules, then, you know, you stick up your middle finger and you do it your way. That's the best thing about podcasting is that this is our medium and it's your medium and you get to deliver how you want your show delivered. And no one can tell you, yeah, sure, you can take some advice, but if you want to do it, whichever way, and someone tells you that's wrong, so what? You don't have to listen. I'm pretty strong opinionated about that. And I think also it's important as independent content creators, because this is where 98% percent of the community is independent content creators. We have a lot of power. Our voices are very strong, and be willing to stick your neck out and speak your opinion when the suits show up with their ties and are making changes, are trying to make changes in the podcasting space. We have to continue to protect independent content creators out there and make sure that there are no gatekeepers. And many of you don't really think about this, but in 2004, when the podcasting space started, there was really no way for us, unless you had a website and you put out an audio file on your website, and then someone found your website and listened to your audio file. That was the only way we could get distribution, is through our own .com. The advent of podcasting and the invention between Dave Weiner and RSS 2.0 and the enclosure and Adam Curry's vision to make a podcatcher, to make it so that we could take the content that we were creating and at the time have it synced to a iPod, not an iPhone, because that didn't exist. There wasn't no Twitter. There was no Facebook. We had the ability then to syndicate our content globally, and no one could say we control it. And I think as podcasters, we need to continue to remember that is the number one essential thing about this whole thing that's made podcasting very, very cool. No one can control us. And that's it's an absolute fantastic thing. And RSS that powers it all, and why I'm so passionate about controlling your RSS feed. No one can control me and become a gatekeeper of my content. It's always the worst stuff that brings out the power of podcasting. Oh, I think, yeah. You know, if we look at what has happened recently, and I'm almost out of time, so Steve, I know I've got 4 minutes left here, I think. If you look at what happened with Alex Jones, no one likes, the majority of people don't like Alex Jones' content, okay? He took up all these social media platforms. He's off, right? He's out of those platforms that are owned by other companies. But one thing that could, and again, it's always the worst that shows, please be, so everyone doesn't flip out here. It's always the worst that makes podcasting show how powerful it is. His content today is still online because he owns his website. He owns his .com. He owns his feed. Until someone takes away his site, he is still online. Now, not to say that that couldn't happen. It could. He may lose his hosting provider. Who knows? But that's an extreme event that shows that his content is still online no matter what. They couldn't take the content off. And again, it's the extremes. So if he'd been hosting on a platform that controlled his feed, boom, he's off. As soon as they canceled his account, he's off the air. And he would have to recreate his audience from scratch, restart, but he didn't. He owned his own feed from the get-go. So I think this is one of the extreme reasons why that I'm so passionate about making sure that podcasters know that they can't be controlled. There's no gatekeepers. Control your feed so no one can control you. Mike, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, just basically, you know, Apple, Google, Stitcher, TuneIn, all those people do not give you permission to podcast. You're podcasting the second you put that first file in an RSS feed. Nobody might know about it, but you are podcasting, and if you can get people to come to it, they can even, use the Apple software to subscribe. Anybody that was subscribed to Alex Jones, like I said, whether you like him or not, even in Apple, still is subscribed. Now, he may not get any new subscribers from that platform, but, you know, he's podcasting regardless of what Apple says about it.
Yeah. So anyway, that's going to wrap us up. I'm Todd at blueberry.com. Todd at blueberry.com. Mike?
Mike at blueberry.com. See a pattern?
It's easy. And of course, if you want to reach me on Twitter, you can reach the company at Blueberry. You can reach me at Geek News. That's my Twitter account. Hope that you will follow me on Twitter. Of course, I do the New Media Show every Saturday with Rob Greenlee from Spreaker at newmediashow.com. I do a personal podcast called Geek News Central at geeknewscentral.com. And of course, Mike and I do the company podcast called Your Podcast, and it's available at powerpresspodcast.com. Mike, where can they hear you?
MikeDell.com. That'll have links to all the podcasts that I do, and On Twitter, it's MGDell. Okay, so that was our session from yesterday. In case you want to see the rest of that, I believe over at internationalpodcastday.com, there will be replays available. If you want to see the video version, you can see me looking all nervous on camera because I have a face for radio and I don't do a lot of video. But anyway, turned out pretty well. Catch us next time on your podcast.